On Tech News Today, Amazon gets into the music business, Uber is the big winner in the anti-Uber protests, and Facebook is giving you more control over the ads it shows you. Elise Hugh is my co-anchor today, and we're joined by reporters from Mashable, The Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg Businessweek, and the International Business Times. Stick around. Tech News Today is coming up right now.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, June 12th, 2014. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
I'm Elise Hugh.
And I'm Jason Owl.
Tech News Today explores the big stories of the day with some of the world's best journalists. Welcome, Elise. You are our new Thursday co-anchor, and I'm so thrilled that you're going to be here every single week.
I am thrilled to join you guys. You have the best audience out there.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And speaking of audience, we have somebody who was in the audience, and now he is going to be somebody we can actually interview. So let's get right into that story. We're having trouble reaching him, and now he's with us. So Amazon has launched a streaming music service called Amazon Prime Music. The service offers access to more than a million songs and hundreds of playlists, according to Amazon, but it's for Prime members only and at no additional cost. Jason Abbruzzese writes for Mashable and just at the last minute joins us to tell us all about this. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Jason, is this a way for Amazon to satisfy existing Prime members, to gain new Prime members, to make money in the streaming music business, to stick it to Google and Apple? Why is Amazon doing this?
So I think the one thing they're definitely not trying to do is make a lot of money off of streaming. You know, this is being wrapped into the Prime service. It's not something that's standalone. There's also no free service. You can't really, like, go in and try it out like you can with Spotify, and then, you know, they might hope to, you know, convince you as a member. It is really just an additional piece of the Prime membership service that they're offering, because what Amazon's trying to do is really give you as many reasons to interact with it as a company as, you know, it can possibly give you, whether it's video, whether it's audio, whether it's books. I mean, really anything you want, Amazon wants to be able to bring it to you, mobile, living room, which we've seen with Amazon Fire, and now even through music.
Jason, we are expecting an announcement from Amazon of possibly its 3D phone coming out later this month. How does this service tie into that phone strategy, if that is indeed what they're rolling out?
Sure. Well, now, you know, we all expect it will be a phone, and all indications are it will be a phone. Now, with a phone, they also have a streaming mobile music service. So they go from kind of, you know, not having either of those things and not having really much of an impact on the mobile world at all, to bringing new hardware and popular content that, you know, mobile users are using more and more on a daily basis.
Is this going to be an app that sits side by side against Spotify and other apps you'd have on your phone, or in their case, the TV and possibly a phone, the smartphone that they offer? Or is this going to be sort of built into the existing Amazon apps?
So this is a standalone app. You can get it on iOS and Android. All Kindle Fire hardware will be updated with it. And it's even going to have a desktop application as well. So they're really going to try to, you know, make this as easy to use and as universal as possible.
Does it hurt Amazon that the selection of music available is so limited compared to, say, Spotify and other services that already have a huge and strong user base? You know, we understand there's no Snoop Dogg, no Elvis, no Eagles, lots of popular musicians and labels aren't going to be part of this library.
I think that's a great question, and time will tell. You know, Amazon's kind of pursued this strategy with all of their Prime Media offerings. You know, their video is probably not as good as Netflix. Now their music's not quite as good as Spotify. So instead of, you know, being a specialist in one area, they're being more of a generalist. You're going to get a pretty good selection, about a million songs right now, and that number is almost sure to grow as they continue to sign more deals. But, you know, it's not for music lovers. It's not for audiophiles. It's kind of a more generalist. It's you know, a little simpler than probably some of the other programs. And what I think that does is it attracts a certain type of user, a certain type of person. And, you know, it gives them the advantage of doing it probably much cheaper than Spotify or Beats or any of the other competitors.
Now, Jason, as far as I'm concerned, without Snoop Dogg, this is a non-starter. Maybe they'll have Snoop Lion.
I was going to say Snoop Lion would lock it in.
Yeah. And of course, you know, his fans are probably too high to own Prime membership services. Jason Abbruzzese, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today and telling us all about Amazon's new music service.
Sure. Thanks very much.
All right. You can find Jason Abbruzzese at Mashable.com and on Twitter at Jason Abbruzzese. You want me to spell that? I'm going to spell Jason's last name. You know how to spell Jason. His last name is spelled Abbruzzese. Thanks again, Jason.
Thanks very much.
Now, Elise, I understand that not everybody is thrilled with the Uber service. Can you tell us what's going on there?
That's right. We have a battle of innovation against regulation and existing laws right now. But are the protests against Uber bringing it a boost? Protests brought traffic to a standstill yesterday in capital cities across Western Europe. But Uber is saying that actually led to an 850% jump in signups of new users. We saw these protests happen in Milan, Berlin, Paris, and London. And one of our guests actually joins us from London, Lisa Fleischer, a tech reporter at the Wall Street Journal. We are lucky to have two guests for this segment. Brendan Greeley, staff writer at Bloomberg Business Week, will also be with us. But Lisa, let's start with you. Tell us, kind of set us up with what these cabbies in Europe are so angry about that led them to take to the streets yesterday.
Which I learned by doing some of these stories. Uber operates a little bit differently. So sometimes they will have private cars available, you know, where you can just kind of get in with anybody who has a license. Sometimes it'll be private cabs that are cabs, but not the type of cabs that are allowed to pick people off the streets. And then the third category is the black cabs that you see in London, or like the yellow cabs in New York City, the iconic cabs that are allowed to just pick people up off the street. And so in every city, there's also different regulations. Now, in London in particular, there are certain regulations that the black cabs say that Uber doesn't follow, and it acts just like a black cab, but doesn't actually have to go through all of the rigorous requirements of becoming a taxi driver. So that's what's going on in London in particular. In every city, it's a little bit different.
Now, Brendan Greeley, you told me your friend is actually a cabbie in London. Can you tell us the difference for those of us in the United States who haven't been to London? Can you tell us the difference about driving a cab as a profession, as it's different in London versus, say, the United States?
Yeah, I think in the United States, we tend to think of cab driving as a service. It's just it's a pulse and two hands on the wheel. And we have very low expectations of the professionalism of a cab driver. If you've ever taken a cab in Washington, D.C., actually, you're pretty much always on your own as far as navigating. You're telling them what to do. They're driving the car.
You're absolutely right, says the person from Washington.
Yes. So in, I don't know how to get to the Capitol building sometimes. But in London, and also in Germany, where these protests happened, the licensing requirements for cabbies are very high. And you get a very high level of professionalism. I mean, it's a little disorienting when you get into a cab in Germany. It's an immaculate Mercedes. And it's driven by somebody wearing driving gloves. And in London, it's a 3-year licensing process to become a cab driver. And you have to know literally every street in London, which is not a small thing.
Actually, Brendan, the average for now, for how long it takes to get a cab license is now up to 4 years. Transportation agency says.
My goodness. So, I'm not making any sort of value judgment on whether that's a good thing or not, but I can sort of see why it is that the cab drivers would be so exercised about this. And the sort of my understanding of what their chief frustration is that if you are an Uber driver, you don't have to pass these same licensing requirements. So as far as they're concerned, one of two things has to happen. Either the Uber drivers have to start passing this licensing requirement, or they need to change the licensing requirement. But I don't think this problem is not just in the UK. Uber's got two lawsuits against it in Connecticut and Massachusetts, where they've done the same thing, where they run the service in a city, and the drivers for Uber don't have to pass the same taxi licensing requirements that the cab drivers in the city do. So I think that's one of the things that happens with creative destruction, as beautiful as it is that it really it can drive down wages, which is something that the taxi drivers in the UK, I think, are particularly worried about. And I think that's the problem, is that taxi driving is sort of a lifelong trade. It's not an entry-level job over there. And so I can see how, even if it might be good for the overall economy, they might look at that with more than a little trepidation.
Lisa Fleischer, is this an own goal situation, if you will, for the taxi cab industry, though? Uber is bragging now about an 850% jump in signups as a result of all this new attention. Is the controversy actually benefiting Uber?
Yeah, a lot of people think that this is just going to give Uber a lot of free PR. And one of the taxi drivers I spoke with yesterday said, you know, this is not really going to achieve our goals. I didn't really mean to be in this protest, but I was taking someone somewhere and I kind of got caught up in it anyways. You know, but the difference is that the taxi drivers say that they're not in London anyways. They say they're not protesting Uber itself, but they're protesting the transportation agency that's not enforcing the rules. And one of the other rules that is sort of particular to London is that only black cabs are allowed to have meters in cars, and meaning like the car is equipped with a taxi meter that figures out the fare. So is the smartphone a meter? I mean, it's calculating the time and the distance, and it's trying to figure out what your fare is based on the same exact, the time you spent in the cab, how far you've gone. But because it's not somehow technically attached to the engine, it's not a meter under the law. Anyway, that's what they're trying to figure out here.
Lisa Fleischer, a columnist for Forbes, who's a British, his name is Tim Warstall. He wrote that the taxi drivers actually fear that Uber will end their, quote, cozy little guild arrangements that protect their incomes as they face the creative destruction of an innovative disruptor. Do you agree with the tone of that? I mean, essentially, I based on what you just said about whether or not a phone is actually a meter, I suspect that you might.
Well, I think that what you're seeing now is you're seeing technology come in and try to fill in gaps that regulations that were created or laws that were created 20 years ago at times just never really intended to address. And we see this all the time in various industries, and this is just the example of it happening in the taxi industry. I mean, you know, I had a friend yesterday say to me, well, they should just, you know, they should just have some sort of phase out period for the requirement to know all the streets of London. You know, it's not fair that like a, you know, Google Maps can come in and just wipe these people's profession off the face of the planet. So you have that that point of view as well. And then, you know, there are certainly people who think that, look, you're just trying to block technology and block improvements. I mean, the interesting thing in London is that the cab drivers will say, hey, we've got no problem with technology. We have no problem with, you know, apps or whatever. I mean, they're very happily working with some other apps that they say follow all the rules and regulations. They just, you know, in particular are annoyed about certain aspects of Uber.
I think that's a really important point, which is that, you know, the London cabbies use Halo, which is it's an Uber-like app that calls you a black cab. So that's already sort of ironed out some inefficiencies in the market. There's something about the triumphalism of that quote from the columnist in Forbes that bothers me. Certainly, you know, a three-year licensing requirement is protectionist. It is a kind of guild. But I have trouble being that happy about the loss of a bunch of middle-class jobs, even if it is more efficient. You know, we've got this problem in all sorts of professions in America. Is it sort of the way things go when you have free and open and innovative markets? Yeah. But I don't know that it's fair to describe London cabbies as a cozy little guild. I think one good consequence of this is that we're actually having a conversation both here and over there on sort of what we expect from cab drivers. Clearly the licensing requirements are wrong. They're going to have to change. But I also believe that they should be applied consistently. You know, you need a hack license if you drive an Uber car or if you drive a yellow cab. The question is, what should that hack license look like? And I think that's the good consequence of this debate.
Right. And if I could chime in here, I mean, like one of the reasons why taxis are so heavily regulated is to protect tourists, you know, not just the industry itself, but when a tourist comes to town and doesn't know where you're going. I mean, if you don't have a smartphone on you, how are you going to be able to tell the taxi driver, actually, here's where I want to go? I mean, I've had this experience where in New York, where I'm going to maybe someplace in the Bronx and the taxi driver just doesn't know how to get there and I have to direct the taxi driver and it's kind of a pain in the butt. Whereas I think years ago, taxi drivers were a lot more familiar with the roads and they didn't rely on the technology as much.
Yeah, I think it's also it's improved things in New York, which is great news. Uber, which is that, you know, the outer boroughs were very underserved. Car services, the way they were before, were very inefficient. And the medallion system in New York is frankly sort of protectionist and extortative. So I don't think that Uber is the devil. I just can't be as excited about shattering an industry as the guy from Forbes was.
Yeah, and of course, cab drivers perform all kinds of services. New York taxi drivers, for example, sell things like bridges to tourists, and that's always a valuable thing, especially for people making bad and old jokes.
Well, New York.
Go ahead.
Oh, a New York cab driver drove a Dutch tourist to Disneyland about 10 years ago. Do y'all remember this?
Yeah.
So that tourist got in and said, I want to go to Disneyland, and several tens of thousands of dollars later, they arrived.
And that's why you need the little meter in the car to go all the way up to thousands of dollars for those Dutch tourists. Well, Lisa Fleischer, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News Today this morning.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
You can find Lisa Fleischer at WSJ.com and on Twitter at Lisa Fleischer. And thank you, Brendan Greeley.
Of course.
All right. Brendan Greeley is at businessweek.com and at BH Greeley on Twitter. Well, Facebook is making a big change to their advertising system. They're going to give users more control over what ads are presented by Facebook, and they're also going to harvest more user data to serve those ads. Fiona Agamo is a tech reporter for the International Business Times, and I welcome you, Fiona. Also apologize for probably munging your last name.
Hi, good afternoon. Not too much of a butchering.
Okay.
Pretty on point.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and thank you for joining us today. Now, Facebook is going to let users tell them, like, let's, when you see an ad you don't like, you're going to be able to click on the ad and tell them, I don't want ads like this. How will that system work?
Well, I actually got the notification for this new change a few minutes ago, and it's basically there'll be a little tab on the side of the ad that you can click, and there'll be a drop-down menu, and it will tell you, why am I seeing this? How can I remove this? So you can click, you know, the specific tabs and edit your profile accordingly. If you don't want to see certain things, you can remove them. You can add things, and you can see what information Facebook is using to dictate what kind of ads show up on your profile.
Now, the other change is on the flip side, right, Fiona? Essentially, that Facebook is going to allow advertisers a lot more data that it already has been getting about users. But now, for instance, browsing history is going to be available as part of the database that helps advertisers target data. Is this an incremental change, or is this a game changer for the way advertisers get to communicate with us?
I don't necessarily think it's a game changer. I feel like that's something that's always been around, because, I mean, I've even noticed kind of, you know, in my own general browsing, I might Google something or just end up on a website. And then, like, a few minutes later, I'm seeing ads for that same website all over, you know, advertisements for other sites that I go to. So that's definitely not like a game changer on Facebook's part. Possibly it's just that, you know, something that Facebook or like a social media type site has never done before.
I think it's really funny that sometimes I buy something and then for the next month I see ads for the thing that I've already bought, because all they know is that I expressed an interest somehow in my web traveling. So that's kind of annoying. I wonder about whether this will actually backfire on Facebook. Right now, people are kind of blissfully unaware of how advertising works and how tracking works. And I wonder whether or not Facebook, which appears to be doing the right thing by allowing users to modify their sort of advertising profiles, if they're going to bring attention to something and sort of rock the boat and make people wonder, do I really want to be tracked? Should I turn off cookies? Maybe this isn't a good thing. Do you think, Fiona, that this will backfire on Facebook?
It's not really something that you can say right away. One thing that I did read was that, you know, there's always the potential for people to put in incorrect information if they wanted to. Like, you don't necessarily have to, you know, adhere to Facebook's protocol, you know. So, you know, I feel like there would still be ways for people to get around, you know, kind of get around the system if they really wanted to. And, you know, there's always the option of not being on Facebook. I mean, I feel like that's, you know, more and more people, you know, are probably leaving Facebook for that very reason.
Yeah, I wish I could leave Facebook as well, but I just can't. So many people I
know.
Yeah,
the family keeps you locked in.
Oh, man. They have
but
what
the Tech News Today family is on Google Plus, I've noticed.
That's right, man. Google Plus. Unfortunately, my mother is not. So there you go.
Yep.
Fiona Agamo, thank you so much for coming on Tech News Today and telling us about this new change to Facebook's ad system.
No problem. Nice talking to you guys.
Nice talking to you as well. You can find Fiona at ibtimes.com, and she's on Twitter at Fiona, A-T-L-B-T.
I-B-T.
Oh, I-B-T. That's right, of course.
Fiona at
Business Times.
Yeah, Fiona at I-B-T.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason.
Yep.
Thanks again, Fiona.
So Mike and Jason, I have some interesting news for our next item.
All
out
right.
of Houston, Texas, Comcast has actually turned 50,000 of its residential Xfinity customers' home routers into a public network of Wi-Fi hotspots. And that number right now is 50,000, but it's expected to swell to 150,000. Mike, this is opt out. So this is customers are automatically opted in to this network, and it's already stirring up some controversy.
Right. It's just, you know, it's a kind of a crazy idea. And we were talking about whether or not the raising awareness about ad networks would kind of backfire on Facebook. In this case, I wonder whether raising awareness that you've got bandwidth coming into your Wi-Fi system that you're not allowed to use, essentially. That what they're saying is that, yes, your Wi-Fi system would be used as a hotspot, but it won't affect the performance of your own personal internet connectivity that you're paying for. In other words, they're sending more internet connectivity to your house than you can really are allowed to use based on the plan that you sign up for. And so I wonder whether people will kind of go, huh, I'd really like some more speed, some more performance, some more bandwidth. Whether or not technically that's relevant or not, I think is beside the point. I think perceptually this kind of rubs customers the wrong way, at least potentially.
Right. But and if you're sort of how this works in practice is if you are essentially driving around Houston, Texas, and you want to get on some semi-public, if you will, Wi-Fi, this Xfinity Wi-Fi is going to show up as one of the possible networks you can jump on, and you jump on that way. Now, that is supposed to be separate from the home networks, Comcast says, of my, say, like beach house or whatever in Galveston or in the Houston area. Now, would the folks who get on the Xfinity public Wi-Fi, if you will, would their individual traffic or possibly sort of nefarious searches affect me as a home user? That's one question that a lot of Houstonians are asking. Comcast is saying no right now. But again, the Houstonians that are getting involved in this program did not have a choice. The switch has been flipped as of sometime Tuesday, and it's going to expand to 150,000 users.
Why would anybody pay for Wi-Fi then or home internet connectivity if your neighbor just has a free hotspot flying around inside your house?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question, especially if that hotspot is competitive. I'm really interested to see how speeds are affected because Comcast is sort of notorious for choking up during times of high traffic.
Yeah. And I've learned something here today. Houstonians, that's how you say it? Houstonians?
That's right.
Oh, wow.
Yep, I'm a proud Texan, but not from Houston.
You learn so much. Yeah, you're from Austin?
That's right.
Yeah, you learn so much on Tech News Today. It's such an informational and educational program. And so I've certainly learned something here today. Well, Starbucks is rolling out wireless charging stations to stores nationwide starting today. In a partnership with Duracell, the coffee seller will be rolling out at stores in San Francisco and Silicon Valley initially, and then nationwide to more than 7,500 stores. Now, at least this sounds like a really great thing, but for the vast majority of caffeine addicts, it's not that great because you really need the right kind of phone or you need a special case or something that supports the particular standard that Duracell supports, which is the Wireless Power Alliance. It will not support the Wireless Power Consortium. Don't confuse the two. Wireless Power Consortium is the Qi standard, which a lot of devices use. But still, it's kind of nice that they're trying to do something with wireless charging. Wireless charging, to me, Elise, is something that's been promised year after year after year, and we just don't see it in any sort of major or mainstream way. And this is one very mainstream and visible place where we're going to see wireless charging, apparently.
Right. Always be charging. And this is yet another reason, if your device is compliant, this is yet another reason to be running to corporate Starbucks for coffee, on top of the fact that they already have the most caffeinated coffee available out there commercially, I think, because there's got to be a reason why there's still these super long lines for Starbucks. Now, Mike, I'm excited about this notion of wireless as well, just because one of the most tedious things about kind of going from place to place or travel is the fact that we are still using this seemingly analog sort of old-fashioned form of charging. And so if Starbucks is on board, perhaps this will kind of start a domino effect or at least spur more wireless charging innovation. You'll get to test it out first, right? Because it's only in San Francisco as it starts rolling out.
That's right. In fact, they've actually had tests going on in just a couple of stores. I think the initial tests were in Boston and also in the Bay Area somewhere. I think not in San Francisco, but somewhere in like Mountain View or something like that. I could be mistaken about that. But they, you know, just minimal testing. And those have, you know, been going on for a year or two. And now they're going to do it for real. Apparently their test resulted in a, hey, this is a great idea feeling by Starbucks. And I don't think people appreciate the degree to which Starbucks is essentially a technology company. They're very aggressive at experimenting with Internet of Things type of functionality. They're experimenting with ways to track inventory, to know exactly how old the milk is. And they even have an experimental prototype coffee cup with sensors in it and chips, and has a scale inside to weigh it, so they know exactly how much of a sip you take and how often and how what the temperature is when you sip your coffee and how what the temperature is when you walk away and how much is still in your cup when you leave. And, you know, they don't have these commercially for people generally. The cup that you get at Starbucks is not going to contain those kinds of sensors. But they're experimenting with that kind of thing, and they really believe in technology as a way to be a differentiator. So
I'm curious. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'm just curious how this is going to affect time in store, sort of this notion of churn of customers in and out of the store. I mean, already in some New York Starbucks locations, folks are kind of parking there too long without getting more coffee. And so they're having to kind of keep the churn going and move people in and out. Now, if we can charge as well in there, wouldn't that mean that we would park in Starbucks longer than they want us to? I guess it depends on how fast the charging works.
Yeah, I mean, they say in some of the articles that are flying around today that Starbucks expects the average person to charge for 15 minutes. But, of course, there's nothing to stop the kind of Starbucks camper from parking there and charging, you know, from zero all the way up. Personally, I think that Starbucks camping is a good idea. I think, you know, I support it as somebody who's spent a lot of time as a digital nomad, especially in Europe. Starbucks is a godsend in Europe because, you know, you think, oh, Europe has this great coffee and so on. Yeah, they also have little tiny tables, no outlets, no Wi-Fi, and it's really great to be able to go into a Starbucks and essentially work and function. What I don't approve of is people being rude to other people. So if you're taking up a table and people are looking around for a place to sit and you've been there for an hour, that's not nice. But if nobody's taking up the tables, I don't see anything wrong with parking. And I think this is a great thing. You know, in most cases at most Starbucks, there are plenty of available tables. And so it shouldn't be a problem. New York City is a different case. I've done a lot of Starbucks camping in New York City, and they get really angry there about it simply because, you know, people rely on their local Starbucks for all kinds of things in their neighborhood. There's one on every block now in right. Manhattan. And you know, people use them, you know, they want to come in and get a quick, you know, check something on their laptop or something for 5 minutes, and they can't because there's no place to sit. There's no place to put the laptop. So it's a different thing in New York City. It's a little bit more intense there. But in general, I think that Starbucks wants to encourage people to use Starbucks as kind of a town hall, a kind of a gathering place. There's a Starbucks that used to be across the street from my house in Los Gatos, which is a little town in Silicon Valley. And, you know, it would be pretty much empty all day. And then around 8 or 9 o'clock, all these college students would just take over the place. And it became this incredible study hall, you know, a hive of activity, no place to sit. And it was fine with everybody because pretty much the non-students weren't really going to Starbucks at 9 o'clock at night. And students had a place to go study. And it's a social good to a certain extent. And of course, they sold a lot of sugar and caffeine.
Well, maybe wireless charging will bring back a sense of community in the physical world.
That's right. That's what we need to bring back community, is wireless charging. Well, at least the whole world of wiretapping and surveillance is a big battleground right now in the United States, but there's been a new strike in direction of privacy. Can you tell us about that?
That's right. A win for civil liberties for now. A U.S. appeals court for the 11th Circuit ruled this week that police and other law enforcement agencies actually must obtain a search warrant before getting location data that's stored in our smartphones. This is actually a reversal of a decision by the 5th Circuit around the same time last year that said the Constitution did not protect our data on the phone. So now we have a situation where the 11th Circuit has ruled one way. The 5th Circuit, which has a totally different jurisdiction, has ruled another way. So there's going to need to be a tiebreaker by the Supreme Court if one of the sides decides to appeal.
And I hope they do, because this really does need to go to the Supreme Court. We need to decide this issue, and I certainly hope that they decide in the way that this appeals court has decided, and that is that it's unconstitutional. It seems to me obvious and clear that it's unconstitutional. That's the whole point of the Fourth Amendment. Just like you can't, you know, you need to have probable cause before you start investigating people and going through their personal effects and information and so on. And so this is potentially good news, but we'll see if it goes to the Supreme Court which way it goes.
Yeah, you can expect the government to defend it. And yes, of course, you can read the ruling online as well. And the ruling argues that the judges argue that trying to gather or obtaining location data from your cell phone is an illegal search. And we are protected against unconstitutional search and seizure by that Fourth Amendment. And so it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out. The next Supreme Court session, of course, doesn't start till September this fall. And then the court will have to decide whether they will take up this case. And all of this depends on whether the petitioners will try and appeal it. And obviously, this is a decision that probably needs to get worked out at a higher level. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, and it's also important for people to know that this particular decision affects only Florida, Georgia, and Alabama, but potentially it could end up affecting all of us when this goes nationwide. So we'll certainly be watching this and see where it goes. Well, yesterday we reported that Feedly got attacked. It was one of the attacks, one of the companies that got attacked besides Evernote. And as of about half an hour ago, it was still down, more than 24 hours of complete non-coverage for Feedly. And so that's quite a disaster. Another follow-up, we reported yesterday during our show that TweetDeck went offline. This happened during the show. We reported it very briefly on the show. And it turns out that an Austrian teenager accidentally exposed a security vulnerability in the software, and the company took it offline to fix it. So it wasn't an attack as initially thought, and it wasn't that the teenager brought it offline. He simply exposed a vulnerability, and they sort of took it down in order to fix that problem that he found.
But gee, it sure hobbled a lot of users at once, and so we're glad it's back. But the fact that this sort of security vulnerability was so easily exposed is a concern.
And in a tiny irony, I found out about it during the show because I'm using Tweetbot and not TweetDeck. Otherwise, I would never have known. Well, that is the tech news today. Elise Hu, thank you so much for coming on the show again. And we look forward to every single Thursday for you to be on the show.
Great to be here. Thanks again. See you next Thursday.
Okay. And very quickly, can you tell people what you've been working on lately and where people can find it?
That's right. You can find me on Twitter at Elise, ELISEWHO, and I blog at NPR.org. Our blog is called All Tech Considered.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Well, you can subscribe, and you should subscribe to Tech News Today at twit.tv/TNT, and you can also subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Tech News Today. And please follow us on Twitter, Tech News Today TV. You can also follow Twit's breaking news feed on Twitter at Twit News. And we want to hear from you, so please send us an email at tnt@twit.tv. And don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.